Chapter 8. That night, after Sean had gone to bed, Duff had his dream again. The wine he had drunk slowed him down and prevented him from waking. He was trapped in his fancy, struggling to escape into wakefulness, but only reaching the surface before he sank back to dream that dream again. Sean went up to Duff's shelter the next morning early. Although the night's coolness still lingered under the spreading branches of the wild figs, the rising day promised to blow dry and burn hot. The animals could sense it. The Trek oxen were clustered among the trees, and a small herd of eland were moving from the waterhole. The bull, with his short, thick horns and the dark tuft on his forehead, was leading his cows away to find shade. Sean stood in the doorway of the hut and waited while his eyes adjusted themselves to its gloom. Duff was awake. "Get out of bed, or you'll have bed sores to add to your happiness." Duff swung his feet off the litter and groaned. "What did you put in that wine last night?" He massaged his temples gently. "I've got 100 hobgoblins doing a Cossack dance around the roof of my skull." Sean felt the first twinge of alarm. He put his hand on Duff's shoulder, feeling for the heat of fever. But Duff was quite cool. He relaxed. "Breakfast ready," said Sean. Duff played with his porridge and barely tasted the grilled eland liver. He kept screwing his eyes up against the glare of the sun, and when they had finished their coffee, he pushed back his chair. "I'm going to take my tender head to bed." "All right." Sean stood up as well. "We're a bit short of meat. I'll go and see if I can get a buck." "No, stay and talk to me," Duff said quickly. "We can have a few hands of cards." They hadn't played in days, and Sean agreed readily. He sat on the end of Duff's bed, and within half an hour he'd won £32 from him. "You must let me teach you this game sometime," he gloated. Petulantly, Duff threw his hand in. "I don't feel like playing any more." He pressed his fingers to his closed eyelids. "I can't concentrate with this headache." "Do you want to sleep?" Sean gathered up the cards and put them in their box.
"No. Why don't you read to me?"
Duff picked up a leather-bound copy of Bleak House from the table beside the bed and tossed it into Sean's lap.
"Where shall I start?" Sean asked. "It doesn't matter. I know it almost by heart."
Duff lay back and closed his eyes.
"Start anywhere."
Sean read aloud. He stumbled on for half an hour with his tongue never quite catching the rhythm of the words. Once or twice he glanced up at Duff, but Duff lay still, with a faint sheen of sweat on his face and the scars very noticeable. He was breathing easily. Dickens is a powerful sleeping draught for a hot morning, and Sean's eyelids sagged down and his voice slowed and finally stopped. The book slid off his lap. The small tinkle of Duff's chain disturbed him. He awoke and looked at the bed. Duff crouched, ape-like. The madness was afire in his eyes, and his cheeks twitched. A yellowish froth coated his teeth and formed a thin line of scum along his lips. "Duff," Sean said, and Duff lunged at him with fingers hooked and a noise in his throat that was not human nor yet animal. It was a sound that jellied Sean's stomach and took the strength from his legs.
"Don't!"
screamed Sean, and the chain caught on one of the posts of the bed, jerking Duff back, sprawling onto the bed, before he could sink his teeth into Sean's paralyzed body. Sean rang, He ran out of the hut and into the bush. He ran with terror, trembling in his legs and choking his breath. He ran with his heart taking its beat from his racing feet and his lungs pumping in disordered panic. A branch ripped across his cheek, and the sting of it served to steady him. His feet slowed. He stopped and stood, gasping, staring back towards the camp. He waited while his body settled, and he forced his terror down until it was only a sickening sensation in his stomach. Then he circled through the thorn bush and approached the laager from the side farthest away from Duff's shelter. The camp was empty. The servants had fled in the same terror that had driven Sean. He remembered that his rifle was still in the hut beside Duff's bed. He slipped into his wagon and quickly opened the case of unused rifles. His hands were unsteady again as he fumbled with the locks, for the chain might have parted, and at every second he expected to hear that inhuman sound behind him. He found his bandolier hanging on the end of his cot and took cartridges from it. He loaded the rifle and cocked it. The weight of steel and wood in his hands gave him comfort, made him a man again. He jumped down out of the wagon, and with the rifle held ready, he went cautiously out of the circle of wagons. The chain had held. Duff stood in the shadow of the wild fig, plucking at it. He was making a sound like a newborn puppy. His back was turned to Sean, and he was naked, his torn clothing scattered about him. Sean walked slowly towards him. He stopped outside the reach of the chain. "Duff!" Sean called uncertainly. Duff spun and crouched. The froth was thick in his golden beard. He looked at Sean, and his teeth bared. Then he charged, screaming until the chain caught him and threw him onto his back once more. He scrambled to his feet and fought the chain, his eyes fastened hungrily on Sean. Sean backed away. He brought up the rifle and aimed between Duff's eyes. "Swear to me. Swear to me you won't bring the rifle to me." Sean's aim wavered. He kept moving backwards. Duff was bleeding now. The steel links had smeared the skin off his hips, but still he pulled against them, fighting to get at Sean. And Sean was shackled just as effectively by his promise. He could not end it. He lowered the rifle and watched in impotent pity. Embe Janey came to him at last. "Come away, Nkosi. If you will not end it, come away. He no longer has need of you. The sight of you inflames him." Duff still struggled and screamed against his chain. From his torn waist, the blood trickled down and clung in the hair of his legs with the stickiness of molten chocolate. With each jerk of his head, the froth sprayed from his mouth and splattered his chest and arms. Embe Janey led Sean back into the laager. The other servants were there, and Sean roused himself to give orders. "I want everyone away from here. Take blankets and food. Go camp on the far side of the water. I'll send for you when it is over." He waited until they had gathered their belongings, and as they were leaving, he called Embe Janey back. "What must I do?" he asked. "If a horse breaks a leg," Embe Janey answered him with a question. "I gave him my word," Sean shook his head desperately, still facing towards the sound of Duff's raving. "Only a rogue and a brave man can break an oath," Embijani answered simply. "We will wait for you." He turned and followed the others. When they were gone, Sean hid in one of the wagons, and through a tear in the canvas he watched Duff. He saw the idiotic shaking of his head, the curious shambling gait as he moved around the circle of the chain. He watched when the pain made him roll on the ground and claw at his head, tearing out tufts of hair and leaving long scratches down his face. He listened to the sounds of insanity, the bewildered bellows of pain, the senseless giggling, and that growl, that terrible growl. A dozen times he sighted along the rifle barrel, holding his aim until the sweat ran into his eyes and blurred them, and he had to take the butt from his shoulder and turn away. Out there, on the end of the chain, its exposed flesh reddening in the sun, a piece of Sean was dying. Some of his youth, some of his laughter, some of his carefree love of life. So he had to creep back to the hole in the canvas and watch. The sun reached its peak and started down again, and the thing on the chain grew weaker. It fell and was a long time crawling on its hands and knees before it regained its feet again. An hour before sunset, Duff had his first convulsion. He was standing facing Sean's wagon, swinging his head from side to side, his mouth working silently. The convulsion took him and he stiffened. His lips pulled up, grinning, showing his teeth. His eyes rolled back and disappeared, leaving only the whites, and his body started to bend backwards. That beautiful body, still slim as a boy's, with the long moulded legs bending tighter and tighter, until with a brittle crack the spine snapped and he fell. He lay wriggling, moaning softly, and his trunk was twisted at an impossible angle from the broken spine. Sean jumped from the wagon and ran to him. Standing over him, he shot Duff in the head and turned away. He flung his rifle from him and heard it clatter on the hard earth. He walked back to his wagon and took a blanket off Duff's cot. He came back and wrapped Duff in it, averting his eyes from the mutilated head. He carried him to the shelter and laid him on the bed. The blood soaked through the blanket, spreading on the cloth like ink spilt on blotting paper. Sean sank down on the chair beside the bed. Outside, the darkness gathered and became complete. Once, in the night, a hyena came and snuffled at the blood outside on the earth. Then it moved away. There was a pride of lions hunting in the bush beyond the waterhole. They killed 2 hours before dawn, and Sean sat in the darkness and listened to their jubilant roaring. In the morning, Sean stood up stiffly from his chair and went down to the wagons. Embijani was waiting beside the fire in the lager. "Where are the others?" Sean asked. Embijani stood up. "They wait where you sent them. I came alone, knowing you would need me." "Yes," said Sean. "Get 2 axes from the wagon." They gathered wood, a mountain of dry wood, and packed it around Duff's bed. Then Sean put fire to it. Embijani saddled a horse for Sean, and he mounted up and looked down at the Zulu. "Bring the wagons on to the next waterhole. I'll meet you there." Sean rode out of the laager. He looked back only once and saw that the breeze had spread the smoke from the pyre in a mile-long smudge across the tops of the thorn trees.